Hello, America, and to all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another, well, extremely damp episode of Let's Weekend. I, of course, am your host for the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Logie. Say hi, everybody.
Hello.
Hi. Hello.
I'm very moist tonight.
Yeah, we all are. Well, it's the dog days of August. This episode, of course, is August 4th, 2017, first show of the month. And, you know, it's basically the first sign that we got one more month and then summer's officially pretty much over.
Yeah. But we'll keep getting drunk and getting lost for the next 2 months after that.
Yeah. Honestly, I can't wait for it to end. I really can't. Yeah. I'm sick of all the humidity. And the sunburns and the freaking, you know, sudden thunderstorms is just, I've had it.
Yeah. Yeah, like the sudden thunderstorm that's happening right now outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At this point, Mother Nature can just go and eat a dick. I'm...
Yeah.
If the environment didn't want to be wrecked, it wouldn't make us uncomfortable.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So. But anyway, so all right. So on this episode, well, we got our usual shenanigans. Of course, we got our assholes and hero of the week. Our asshole of the week especially deserves it, and you're going to find out why. Apparently, some members of the GOP are starting to realize that Trump might be a bad idea.
You think?
Might be time to cut the rope.
Hmm.
We also got some science news that's also going to lead to some juvenile humor. Mm-hmm. Just trust me, wait for it. Oh yeah, and Pharma-douche, yeah, he finally got nailed, and it's going to be, well, you'll find
yet.
Out.
That happens after, well,
we'll talk about it.
We're getting to it.
Yeah.
Save the sodomy jokes for later.
Oh, he I've also, got him.
Yeah, he's got plenty, trust me. And, of course, we got some media news, like some, you know, Rick and Morty news, some MTV news. Surprisingly, they do actually still play music videos, believe it or not. And also, HBO got hacked. And, well...
Yeah.
You'll find out about all that and more on this episode of Let's Weekend. But first, before we begin doing anything, Phil, what were you up to this week?
Well, other than melting, I've been listening to The Reality Dysfunction by Peter F. Hamilton. Started on that trilogy, and it's pretty good so far. It's weird. I like the idea of the living starships. That's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's, I'm only like 2 or 3% of the way through that book, and it's like 41 hours long, so I still got a long way to go. So there's plenty of weirdness ahead in that series. Other than that, I'm doing some random TV shows here and there, you know, Pinky and the Brain, some Babylon 5, what else have I started to watch? Not a whole heck of a lot there. Oh, yeah, Max Headroom, because that's amazing. And oddly prescient.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there's that. Oh, and I watched a really old movie, came out in 1970, called Colossus, the Forbin Project. This is a movie about artificial intelligence going amok. Oh, if only we had a story to talk about that related to that. Yeah. We'll get to that later, but it's basically the same premise as the Facebook AI story, which is two AIs start talking to each other and then develop their own language and then take over the world and then everybody dies. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. I mean, it's a 1970s movie, so there's not a whole heck of a lot to, you know, really say about it. It's got those typical giant 70s computers that don't really make any sense, and despite the fact that Colossus can talk, he still types to humans for some reason. I didn't get that, but anyway. Yeah, it's not bad. It's worth a rental if you find it. yeah, it's kind of a classic. So that's been pretty much it for me. How about you, Pat?
Still streaming. Took my first steps into playing Smite last night with some other streamers. That was fun. I really got a lot to learn about that game, though.
Yeah.
Other than that, a series of conversations have taken place, and I seem to be on the way out of Utah.
That, well, that could go worse.
Yeah.
it's been a long time coming. I just, like I said, conversations played out kind of suddenly, and everything seems to be working out.
Yeah.
All right.
So, you have, well, you don't have the details of that yet, but.
No.
Yeah, share those as time goes on.
Yeah,
I'm excited. Will you still be employed with the same company, or?
I'm not sure.
Well, you don't know if you've got work lined up over there yet or not?
It's not that immediate.
Oh, okay.
Just something that's starting to materialize, and over the next several months, we'll. Yeah.
Well, if you can find living quarters, if you can find those first, then I'm pretty sure that's going to end up happening.
Yep.
From there, well, getting a job is not really that hard if you know where to look.
Yeah.
So. Good support network. It'll be. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Don't forget, there's a lot of game development happening in that area, so.
Yes, there is. Yeah, honestly, it'd be interesting to see what I could get into out there. So,
A whole new set of opportunities.
Yeah. So that's been my week.
All right. What about you, Chris?
I did enjoy the return of Last Week Tonight, where John Oliver and his team tears into Alex Jones.
About damn time.
Not so much the crazy conspiracy theory part of it, but how he kind of just constantly shills for his store.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Of shitty items. They bought a bunch of it. They bought a Bill Clinton rape whistle, which came with a 9/11 was an inside job bumper sticker that they did not ask for. Just like a
bonus piece of crap.
Yeah. They bought a bunch of the supplements, which he calls nutraceuticals. I guess the joke that John has is that it's like the word nutrition fucks pharmaceutical, with a nice graphic thing for that. But ultimately it comes to the conclusion that he portrays constantly like the store or the show kind of being on the verge of shutting down, despite it never actually probably getting to that point.
Yeah, little known fact, Alex Jones is a multimillionaire.
Yep.
Yeah, he talked about it on the recent Megyn Kelly show that they make like $40, $50 million a year. So there's no way that he needs any of that money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That badly, at least. But also talks about solutions to a lot of the crazy conspiracy theories he brings up. Like, hey, there's chemicals in the water. How about some water filters, machines? All that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, that's just a fun show. And also the doctor that he supposedly has that helps make sure everything is on the up and up, who proclaims himself to have graduated from several colleges, and has only graduated from Texas College of Chiropractic College. Basically, contacted all the other colleges he claimed he had degrees from. It's like, nope, none of them. Said he was an alumni from MIT, and I think he just went to a course there. And they specifically said to call himself an alumni is not anywhere close to the truth. Things like that. While joking that he's Tom Petty, but you put him in machine dry instead of take him to the dry cleaners.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a fun show to learn a little bit more about the craziness that is Alex Jones, but that puts it all into good context where you see it's he's more of a con man,
mm-hmm.
just a crazy person.
He's a grifter.
Yeah. As for games, I'm continuing to play Pyre. It never seems to end. It just continues on and on. Still enjoying it a lot. It's just like, okay, where are we getting to the end game? I see where the end game is going. We just got to work our way there, and it's the stuff between the matches takes more time than the actual game itself, the rights. But yeah, review will be this weekend. As long as I get to an end, if there is one, I guess. I think I got something like 16 trophies today, just trying to get through as much as possible, which is kind of crazy. As for other stuff, I've been playing more Marvel Heroes Omega, which I've been putting more time into Squirrel Girl. As well as I'm nearing the point where I can get one of the other mid-tier heroes with enough Eternity Splinters. But yeah, so far, so good with that game. Just continues to be fun to play. I'm still like halfway through the campaign with Squirrel Girl. I'm at about 45 with her, level 45, so getting towards the max. Still haven't tried out, I forget what the other hero is that I have. Yeah, looking forward to playing more of that. I was kind of dipped into, Diablo 3.
Mm-hmm.
The season's ended on that. So, I got back on, saw there was a new season going on, got my rewards on the PS4 version, which is a bunch of stuff, which is, real good for, some of the new heroes I'm trying to start up, some of the other classes I haven't played yet. So that's a good way to sort of just get some quick, good loot for that. But the new season seems like early on you'll be able to get like actual new pets and some good stuff like that. They're not just going to be outshadowed quickly by, just playing, getting more loot.
Hmm.
Also been playing more, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. Still enjoying that a lot. Not really much more success I've gotten lately. I got into the top 10 again, mostly just from kind of just staying away from people as much as possible. But otherwise, just kind of having some bad landing spots and running into people without necessarily paying too much attention to watching out for them or just not doing well, just taking them out when I have the chance, which is usually just due to not having great weapons to take them out with.
Mm.
But also enjoying watching some Giant Bomb and Waypoint play that stuff. Waypoint's pretty good, just specifically because Austin Walker and Patrick Klepek are doing the playing. Austin plays the role of the father. They're like role-playing as father and son. Because Austin had played more of it at the start. So he's kind of teaching his son how to play, all that stuff. Which gets hilarious because Patrick is playing with a Mac keyboard.
Mm-hmm.
So like, there's a page up, I think, is for zoom in on the scopes. He's like, page up, page up. It's like, I don't have that on this keyboard. Or a Z to go to prone. And he talks about how he put it on the mouse, one of the mouse buttons, because the Z on the Mac keyboard is not good. So he tells him to press Z, and he's like, what's C? And then finds out later it's all that stuff. They have a good moment in one of the episodes where the internet in the Waypoint office just dies right towards the end of the match, like in the final 10. So Austin's trying to get to the circle with Patrick, and he just gets the lag detected thing where everything just stops. And he's just freaking out because he knows it's important shit going on, and he's not able to do anything on the internet. And Patrick managed to get to number 2 by himself before he dies. It's like, oh, they stole our chicken dinner. Which is just some great drama, even that's not really done just by the game. But yeah, also been doing more YouTube stuff. Having some trouble this week with videos that YouTube doesn't want to put up. It just errors out during the upload. Like, I put it to upload while I go to work, and I come back and it's at 42%. It's like, I've been gone long enough. This should have been done. And see that, oh, it just stopped for whatever reason.
Yeah, I've actually seen a lot of people complaining about that this week.
Yeah. Or I get a video uploaded, but it just fails during the processing.
Yeah, that too.
That was annoying. So the Dead Alliance video I did, which is the new Illphonics game, is coming out in a month. I tried out the beta, and it was really bad. My first two matches aired out during them, so I got kicked out. Seems like they do the same thing that they did with Friday the 13th, where the host is one of the players. So if they quit or have some issue happen, everybody else just gets kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
And the second time, it just had a weird error that just kicked me out. And I completed my first match in the video. I think I completed one other one. I had a weird thing where I was in like the pre-game thing where you can just go around and just shoot for little bits while it's readies up for the next game. And for whatever reason, the camera just goes nuts and just puts me into spectate mode without me knowing it's a spectate mode. So I'm just sitting there like flying around the camera around the areas like, what the hell is this? There's like no controls or anything listed, so I don't know what the hell's going on. This game just bugging out.
Hallmarks of quality there.
Yeah. It's like, this is your beta. This is your way to curry public favor, and you just shat the bed. This shitty-ass game. And yeah, the video reflects that. I think after I completed the first match, it brought up like, hey, pre-order now. I couldn't get past that page. I had to click on it to bring up the page on the PlayStation Store, let it load, and then exit out, and then I could move on. But if I tried to exit out like as soon as it showed up, it just like, hey, pre-order. Like, no, your game is bad. There's no money going on here.
Yeah.
And that game's out in like 4 weeks. They're not going to do well with that game. Put up a couple of my freeloading video this week was on APB Reloaded, which is on PS4, Xbox One, and PC, and that game is real bad. It takes a lot of doing to make an open world game that controls bad, especially one where you're supposed to be able to shoot people, and I think I killed 2 people, died probably like 10 times in the video. Vehicle controls are really bad. They're laggy. So I'm sitting there like saying, okay, I'm turning left and I'm still going right. And it like takes a second for it to actually listen to what you're doing. And it's like, this driving is terrible. And the whole game is terrible actually. So, and it's a game people should avoid at all cost. Let's see, I did a couple of VR videos, one for Perfect, which is from Endreams, who makes the assembly, and but instead of it being an actual game, it is kind of just a relaxation game. And they have like a couple of areas you can just go hang out at, some of them around like bodies of water, and you can pick up rocks and just skip them on the lake, or there's one that's an island, you can do that stuff. There are bonfires you can go to and have sticks, and you can like set the sticks on fire and just throw them around. There's like a little bit of physics-y fun in there. As well as just relaxing, though. They have some night versions of the different areas.
Hmm.
And those are a bit more tense. Because you go to the snow area, and you just hear wolves howling. It's like, this is what is it? The Gray? Is that the movie where Liam Neeson fights crazy wolves?
I think so.
Yeah, it's like, I'm going to keep an eye on my back. These wolves are going to come fuck me up. And the island is the same way. It's like, there better not be any dinosaurs here fucking around. it kind of gets a little bit creepy just in how calm it is. But otherwise, it's a neat little thing. They advertise you can play Spotify music during it, though that's just normal game stuff. But I couldn't necessarily try it out just because of the video. Because you have to turn off the copy protection stuff, so they don't let you use the video, the music stuff anyway. But yeah, it seems like it could be a neat thing for just winding down. I don't know why you do that in VR, but hey, I'm going to strap this screen to my face to relax. The other VR thing I played was a free-to-play game on PlayStation VR called Air Force Special Ops Nightfall, which is about, or at least the part I played was about parachuting. A lot of like the paratrooper stuff that the Air Force has. And it's really cool. It's pretty in-depth in what they have you do. And it kind of gets to be a bit of pilot wings to it. But yeah, like at the very beginning, you get this like notepad that shows you the different controls and such. So you actually have to pull the ripcord to pull out your parachute. Like actually pull the move controller over to your chest and rip it out. They have like a little timing mechanic for that, as well as for jumping and all that. You kind of actually have to grab onto the things to steer your parachute and all that and try and get through these gates. And then actually do the landing, which is the thing that's the most jarring just from a VR standpoint, mm-hmm. because you're already sitting. Then your guy is just kind of actually doing the landing, like the rough landing. You're like, oh, I'm not actually doing this. Almost not really to get you sick, but it's just kind of that jarring perspective thing. And the second thing I did in that was more the pilot wings, where you're just purely trying to aim to go through these gates as you're just diving, which was pretty cool. And you're kind of holding the two move controllers sort of out in front of you, and you move it further away or close to you to sort of try and steer your character. But yeah, that was pretty cool. Definitely want to play some more of that. And it's free. It's pretty well in depth for a free thing, which most of the other free things for PSVR kind of video experiences and things like that aren't really all that in-depth. You just do it for like 10, 15 minutes and you're done. You can delete it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something that I can actually come back to and play some more. And it seemed like they had more other disciplines, but they weren't letting me switch them out. So I don't know if it was just, oh, here's a sort of thing that you can pick like different divisions, but it's all the same. I don't know if it was that or what. But yeah, that was pretty cool to see.
Could also be they just haven't added them yet.
Maybe, though. I don't think you're doing anything like that. Mm. I think it's sort of a here's the game, it's done, pretty much. But yeah, the anniversary I celebrated this week was the Mark of Cree turned 15 this week.
Mm.
I put it in the context of that combat system. Was kind of a predecessor to what a lot of action games have at this point, like Assassin's Creed, Batman, Sleeping Dogs, and a whole host of others have that sort of rhythmic crowd control combat that's is all the rage now.
Mm-hmm.
And as well as just remarking how good the the sort of Emperor's New Groove-esque Disney art style just still looks great to this day. And also,
can we get
that
a HD remaster of that, please?
Yeah, there is one on PS4.
Hmm.
Well, the PS2 version remaster for PS4. How it really juxtaposes with the fact that you're just killing these motherfuckers. They're just bleeding, all that, and you can take them down, and they're just sitting there like, just like nearly dead, and you just gotta stick them with the sword again.
Mm-hmm.
And the other guys just recoil in terror is how badass you are just fucking these people over. I was like, and this thing looks like a fucking Disney movie. But yeah. I think it's been mostly it. I got one more VR video I have to do, just been real busy with other video stuff. That'll be going up on the Smash Pad channel probably this weekend. Let's see if I can record it tonight after the show. It's an online multiplayer game, so I need my internet to not be doing anything, which is not easy to do when you have to re-upload videos a couple times because YouTube is stupid. So yeah, that's been pretty much it. We survived a tornado warning today. So that was good. Yeah, I was looking at the weather. Like, the humidity for the next, like, 2 weeks is at least 60% and up, which is always great.
Mm.
So I think we're luckily, like, here in the Midwest and a little bit more west of the rest of the country is getting into a bit of a cold spell, where it'll be in, like, the 60s and 70s more than it is in the south and the west, the west coast. So we should be staying a little bit cooler despite that, which was nice the other day. I was out. It was, like, 80 degrees and humid as fuck. And it rains for 5 minutes, and it just dropped real quickly. It's like, well, the rain sucked, but now it's not fucking hot as hell, which is always nice out of the weather in August. So, yeah, that's been it. How about you, Brandon?
All right, well, first things first, yeah, my primary gaming for this week is still Final Fantasy XIV.
Yes.
I did manage to finally become a Dragoon. I'm now at level 33. And the thing about once you get into the 30s, that's when it starts to get more and more difficult to level up. Because, because at that point, you know, it was sort of a very sort of regular rhythm of, okay, go and do this, and it gets you a bunch of experience points and some, you know, some gil and some...
I said gear, but...
Gear, yeah. Yeah. But what happens is that once you get past 30, the experience points you get from the missions aren't enough anymore. You have to actually not... You either have to go out and farm for experience by, you know, grinding, or you have to, you know, look for some side missions, some side quests, and that ain't always easy. Because some of them
Fates are annoying anyway.
Yeah.
But usually, even at the worst, you're only a few dungeon runs away from a level up.
Yeah.
Of the most recent.
So, let's see, right now I'm in the middle of talking, well, I'm fixing to get ready to fight Titan.
Wait till you, speaking of that fight, there's an extreme version.
Uh-huh.
There are memes about it.
I'm sure there is.
That was kind of the defining boss fight, so you're about to get the initial sort of beginning example of it.
Yeah.
The mechanics.
Yeah, and this is the only second primal I've actually fought. I was one before it, but he had turned out to be pretty chill, so I didn't have to fight him. But right now, other than that, you know, I decided that I joined up with the Maelstrom because, that's who I, you know, I like Limsa Lamensa, and I like their whole sort of aesthetic that they do. And I was like, yeah, all right, I can get down with this. You guys can still hear me, right?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, you guys went quiet there for a second. You know, because those you don't know, Limsa Lamensa was basically founded by pirates. And it's basically like their whole aesthetic is piracy-based. So, like, their city is basically made up of, like, bits and pieces of the old pirate ship that, you know, beached on that particular part of La Nacia. And their flag, their, you know, their standard is basically a blood red filled with a golden pirate ship in the middle of it. And, you know, one of the things you do before you decide to join up with one of the grand companies, that's, you know, what one of the Maelstrom is one of those. You basically go to all the three main areas, you know, go there, you go Ulda and Gridania, and then you take part in what they call a remembrance ceremony, basically is a remembrance of those who fell for the event that brought the original Final Fantasy XIV to a crashing end. And I was like, yeah, okay, I'll join up with these guys. So that's what I've also been doing. Oh, and I finally got access to the Golden Saucer. I had to look that one up because it was driving me crazy trying to find out how to get there. And it's turns out it's just this one dude in Ulda that you have to talk to. And he's like, you know, and he just sort of tells you about the Golden Saucer. And he's like, here's a ticket and you can go there. And it's like, all right. It's, let's just say I kind of wish something like it existed in real life. A giant adult Disneyland with gambling and hookers. Like,
Triple Triad, of course.
Yeah.
No, isn't that technically Reno?
Well, Reno, if it was a little closer to Vegas. Yeah, all the bright lights and stuff is in Vegas. Reno is basically is a few miles from there. But yeah, so I gotta wait to get up to level 34 before I can start the fight with Titan. Other than that, obviously I've been doing more reading. I actually went to the used bookstore today, came back with a good haul. I've been wanting to, I'm starting to get into Robin Hobb, who his work is, if you looked into the, you know, the fantasy science fiction section of your bookstore, you've definitely seen her there. She's like one of the big popular writers in that genre. Not quite as big as George R.R. Martin, but she's close. And her stuff is basically like sort of low fantasy and sort of an Age of Sail type universe. And I was like, well, yeah, that's up my alley, so why not? But, the sky is kind of falling right now. because it's the dog day, August is the dog days of summer. It's basically the point when summer is on its last legs, autumn is sort of trying to start poking its ass into it, and summer's like, no, fuck you, go away. And so it's basically summer and autumn are in a death struggle, and we're sort of caught in the crossfire. So basically it's been nothing but humidity, disintegrating heat, and then sudden destructive thunderstorms for the last 3 days. that's pretty much been my week. Anybody got anything else they want to add?
No, I'm good.
Alrighty then. Well, it is now time once again for everybody's favorite segment of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And today I'd like to tell you a little bit about the history of my people. The Backwood Hicks Southern people, as it were. So when you think of Southerners and say the olden days, you probably have some sort of genteel antebellum image of, you know, gentlemen with, you know, fancy jackets and black ties, you know, with canes going about, "I challenge you to a duel, sir," that type of bullshit. Plantations screaming about each other's honor, women in those big, you know, fancy dresses, constantly fanning themselves because even back then, this place was too hot for real humans to live in. Here's something about us back then you probably didn't realize. Back in the 1700s, we liked to fight. And when I say fight, I don't mean fight as in like old-timey boxing matches. I mean fight as in we tried to tear out each other's eyes and testicles. So just go ahead and show you a quick little image here. This was taken from a Southerner from the mid-1700s who had been arrested by the local law during a brawl. And this was a sketch of his hands. Now, what do you notice when you look at that? Well, one of the things you'll probably notice is the fact that, well, one thing, he's missing a finger. And the other is that it looks like he's basically got claws for fingernails. That is not by accident. That is by design. Basically, when people got into fights back in the 1700s in the South, this wasn't just a regular wrestling match. This was trying to basically mutilate the person you're fighting. And the fact that you would actually walk away with one of your opponent's eyeballs was kind of a sign that you won. There's actually a bit of a from an English minister named Charles Wood Mason who had a sermon he gave in 1760. And one of the parts in that sermon reads, "I would advise you when you do fight not to act like tigers and bears as these Virginians do, biting one another's lips and noses off and gouging one another, that is, thrusting one another's eyes and kicking one another on the cods to the great damage of many a poor woman." Yes, that is literally, basically, dick biting was such a big deal back then that they actually started talking about it in church. There's even stories of when during one particular fight, a spectator told one participant that he was doing badly. Said individual stood up and said, "Have I?" And then reached into his pocket and he had his opponent's eyeball that he had plucked out when he was falling backwards. There's stories of some individuals like, say, explorer Isaac Weld, who once said, "What is worse than all is these wretches in their combat endeavor to their utmost to tear out each other's testicles." Yeah.
Okay, here's the thing going on there.
Oh, it gets better, because this isn't just nameless lunatics. These include individuals like Davy Crockett. Davy Crockett, in his autobiography, once wrote about a fight he had in the South where he said, "I kept my thumb in his eye and was just going to give it a twist and bring the peeper out like taking a gooseberry in a spoon." Supposedly the fight was interrupted before he could finish, which is probably why there's not, you know, a verse about it in, you know, his song. There was even a book about all this shit written that was called "Gouge and Bite, Pull Hair and Scratch." It's basically a old book that documents sort of the whole way that this shit went down. And he documents a particular fight that was started as a disagreement over which state was the best. Of course, we now just do that with college football, but...
Yeah, well, there you go. Somewhere.
Yeah.
Well, those most college football matches do tend to degenerate after a while.
Yeah. From the written description, we found the combatants fast clenched by the hair and their thumbs endeavoring to force a passage into each other's eyes, while several of the bystanders were betting upon the first eye to be turned out of its socket. For some time, the combatants avoided the thumb stroke with dexterity. At length, they fell to the ground. In an instant, the uppermost sprung up with his antagonist's eye in his hand. As you could probably guess, these fights eventually became less and less socially acceptable, and eventually they just disappeared altogether. Probably because, you know, they just decided that it was better to just use your fists once, you know, boxing became a thing.
Yeah.
Or, well, eventually everybody in the South would go blind.
Yeah.
So, eventually everybody just decided, it's enough.
Yeah.
And just one more way to finally end it. This is a drawing from a particular fight that actually is supposed to have taken place in Virginia. It's a tiny picture, but as you can see, he is trying his best to rip that man apart.
Hmm.
It's a proud heritage we Southerners have.
Well, at least you've outgrown it, mostly, apart from the college football thing.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, for those who are curious, a lot of the people who settled in the South, most of them were from the Scottish Highlands.
Hmm.
Yeah. So take that piece of information and, you know, take whatever conclusion you will. And that was yet another example of Brandon's random factoid.
Okay. Still have my eyeballs. Think yep. I'll keep them.
All right, now it's time to get to the show proper. And to start us off, to start us out, we, of course, got our asshole of the week. And, oh my God, does this guy absolutely 100% deserve it. We're talking about Stephen Miller. Stephen Miller, for those of you who don't know, is the White House press... Let's see, what is he? He's senior advisor to the president. He is one of the most weaselly-looking motherfuckers on the planet. Man has no morals whatsoever. He absolutely is one of those people who... He really doesn't care. I mean, I swear the man comes off like a complete sociopath.
Yeah.
And... this week, he basically took a big dump on the Statue of Liberty. So for those who don't know, President Trump was introducing the idea for the what was called the RAISE Act, which is basically meant to attempt to cut immigration into the legal immigration to the United States by about half. Basically, he's wanting to implement a point-based system and essentially add up, in some ways, something kind of similar to like how, you know, Canada's immigration system is, where, you know, you have to have enough money in the bank, you have to have a job, and you have to speak the language fluently. Here's the problem, though. The United States, well, first of all, I hate to say this, the United States is not Canada. You know, I love Canada. Canada's an awesome country, and I hope that America can aspire to some of the things she's great at. But America was founded upon some certain ideals. And some of those ideals are inscribed on the base of the Statue of Liberty. So during a press conference when Miller was being his weaselly little self, I think it was Joe Acosta or Jim Acosta from CNN basically asked him, he's like, look, isn't this kind of going against like the spirit of America? Like, bring me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. You know, your wretched refuse, send these tempest tossed to me. I lift my left side, blah, blah, blah. You guys know the thing. And so Stephen Miller basically turns around and he says, well, first of all, the Statue of Liberty is a symbol of American liberty lighting the world. It's American liberty enlightening the rest of the world. What you're talking about doesn't matter because it was added later. Now, okay, first of all, that doesn't matter part. I added that in. But if you've watched the footage, it's basically that's what he's implying.
Hmm.
And then it got just even bigger where he's talking about, like, you know, why are you making it so that a person absolutely has to speak English when, first of all, I don't know if anybody knows this. America does not have an official language.
No.
Nope.
Unofficially, the majority language is English. But we have people from all over the world who speak a bunch of different languages. English is just sort of the common language that everyone uses.
Yeah, and there are plenty of signs that are bilingual.
Yeah.
Depending on the area.
And frankly, I think it does everyone a lot of good to learn more than one language anyway.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, in Canada, everybody basically has to learn, you know, English and Canadian French. So, I mean, it's not like it's some impossible thing.
No.
Yeah.
But no. And then he goes off on this, like, faux rant where he's like, I can't believe that you think that only white people can speak English. I'm like, that's kind of goalposting bullshit. And then he says, you know, it's like it betrays your cosmopolitanism. Like, then the thing is, the dude does not keep, you know, Stephen Miller did not keep calm this. He got physically and visibly upset about all of this. He started, you know, like, basically talking down to Jim Acosta. And just showing himself for the weaselly asshole he is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And there's one bit where he's talking about, like, oh, in the 70s when we let in 300,000 people a year. Is that violating the Statue of Liberty law? It's like, what? What is this stupidity that he's... It was like, at that point, my mind just started melting because I was just... None of what he said started making any sense.
Well, it doesn't make any sense because you've got a presidential administration that is literally bad-mouthing one of the primary symbols of the United States.
Yeah.
One of the primary symbols of the United States that actually has no negative connotation to it. You know, other than the fact that it's an American symbol.
Yeah. You know? Like, the way that we let in legal immigrants compared to, like, Canada has way fewer people.
Yeah.
I think the proposed numbers they would let in is less than what Canada is allowing in.
Yeah, Canada is actually letting more people in than we are. And in fact, those immigration standards I mentioned earlier, because of the refugee crisis, they've actually relaxed some of those standards.
Yeah.
So they're actually, you know, they are unlike in the U.S. where we're all about this refugee bullshit. In Canada, they've actually, like, made the effort to roll back some of their immigration, you know, restrictions just so they can let some of these desperate people in.
Yeah.
Which should show you how good Canada is right now and how far we Americans have fallen.
Yeah, because Statue of Liberty isn't necessarily like a light of how good we are compared to the rest of the world. It's sort of a symbol of where, you know, the refugees and such from other countries can come to America. And find a new place to potentially start a new life.
Yeah.
Right.
As was the case during, like, World War I and II, when a ton of immigrants came into New York and in New York City and found homes in the various boroughs and added a lot to the makeup of that city.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, this is the first time I know of where, ever since we had the Statue of Liberty installed, For those who don't know, the Statue of Liberty was installed in around the mid-1800s. Like, I think it was like, if I can remember, it was installed in, let's see, when was it erected? Let's see. It was dedicated in 1886. So, you know, ever since then, this is literally the first time I've heard a presidential administration actually badmouth the Statue of Liberty.
Yeah. Like,
that's freaking insane. Every week I keep thinking, is this what's going to finally sink them? Like, is this the final, that is this what's finally going to, the straw that's going to break the camel's back? You know, when is it finally going to be so much that America will be absolutely just a swath in moral outrage and everyone will finally just say enough? We can't take any more. This man must go. I don't care if we have to put up with 3 years of Mike Pence. Just get this man out of the White House. His very existence is tearing this country apart. But no, it seems like it doesn't matter how bad it gets. By the way, you can go ahead and add in Teresa if you want to.
Yeah, she's not on Skype right now.
Oh, okay. I keep telling myself the day will come that eventually there will be that one thing. Like, okay, for those who don't know, Robert Mueller has actually, the guy who's in charge of investigating Trump right now, has impaneled a grand jury to start looking into, you know, the Russian ties, all the other stuff. And I keep thinking that's where he's going to get stuff, and that's where it's finally going to where it's just going to break. And, I mean, you've even had people straight up say that if Trump gets indicted then or impeached, that there's going to be like an uprising or something.
Well, there's going to be celebration in the streets. That's what's going to happen.
Yeah. But I don't know, man. You know what? Just to keep in the spirit of it, how about I actually read you that poem? For those who don't know, the poem that's put on the base of the Statue of Liberty is called The New Colossus. It was written by poet Emma Lazarus in 1883 when she was attempting to raise money for the construction of the pedestal for the Statue of Liberty. For those who don't know, the Statue of Liberty originally, if you look at the Statue of Liberty now, you'll notice there's a statue and then underneath it there's this sort of elaborate pedestal underneath it. That originally wasn't there. The pedestal was added later.
Okay.
And this poem was sort of meant as her way of helping to raise money for its construction. So she wrote it and all the proceeds, of course, went towards the fund to construct it. And this is basically what it says. It's only about, eight, 14 lines long. It's only two stanzas, but it's what it says that counts. It says, here it goes. Not like the brazen giant of Greek fame with conquering limbs astride from land to land, here at our sea-washed sunset gates shall stand a mighty woman with a torch, whose flame is the imprisoned lightning, and her name, Mother of Exiles. From her beacon hand glows worldwide welcome. Her mild eyes command the air-bridged harbor that twin cities frame. Keep, ancient lands, your storied pomp, cries she, with silent lifts. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. The wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless tempest tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. That is the spirit that Stephen Miller took a shit on this week.
Yeah.
And frankly, that should be an automatically get your ass kicked out of the administration. Out of fucking governance, period. But no. No. This is as far as we've fallen now.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to say this. You want the French Revolution? Because, hey, motherfucker, this is how you get the French Revolution. Okay? Just keep doing this bullshit, motherfucker. You want, you know, these dipshits talk all the time about how, you know, the, you know, they take that Thomas Jefferson quote, you know, every now and then the Tree of Liberty must be fed with the blood of patriots and tyrants. It is its natural manure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, see, the thing is, they always are the ones who think that they're the patriot, that we're the tyrants, that they're not the tyrants. But keep this shit up, and you're going to find out whose tyrant's blood is going to be spilled, okay?
Yeah.
Just
putting that out there.
Yeah, they take patriotism too far. Because I think most people care more about the country than just the president.
Yeah.
That's the way it should be. Because the president's supposed to work for the people in the country, not the other way around. But that's kind of what the current administration is all about.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. It's all about the president.
Yeah.
And he's the president. You're supposed to listen to him. No, that's not how it fucking works. No.
The president works for you guys, not for himself.
It's him trying to... We didn't fucking vote him in so he could just fucking be a stupid idiot.
We didn't vote for him, period, dude.
Yeah, that's why I said we didn't vote him in.
You know, the only reason he became president is because of a stupid technicality, and that's it.
Yeah.
Whatever. Tens of thousands of votes in, like, 3 states.
Yeah.
Proportionate.
Well, if there's any way we can get that little bit of awfulness, the taste out of our mouth, we do have our Hero of the Week. And this week, our Hero of the Week was a preschool teacher who was... Let's see.
Yeah, she was on a flight, and the person next to her had a very large phone with the enlarged font on it.
Mm-hmm.
And she saw on his text screens that he was messing with that something things about sexual abuse, and then something about children, and decided that she needed to take action. Took pictures as best she could.
Mm-hmm.
Alerted the flight attendants, and when they landed, they detained him. He's 56 years old, and he was talking to at least a female partner of his who was babysitting for some kids. He was basically telling her to start doing whatever it was they were going to do with the kids. They were 5 and 7. They don't know how she got to be their babysitter. But yeah, they're not talking much about how they got hold of the kids, or how they knew each other or any of that. But yeah, they're both in jail. I believe, let's see, they were going, they got these stupid Facebook shit over part of this. They went from a flight from Seattle to San Jose, and the woman was in Tacoma. So yeah, she did a really awesome thing, assessing out that this was going on, alerted the right people, and helped at least save 2 kids from further terrible stuff.
Yeah.
I don't think it mentions anything about what might have happened before or if they have any history of doing this to other kids in the past, which I would guess so.
Yeah. Eva, man, you got to talk about being at the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
Because,
I mean, being the right kind of person that would be obligated to try to help these kids.
Yeah, that's, you're talking about a, like a certain sense, a certain, you know, order of circumstances that had to line up just right for this to happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she was observant, and, you know, he was able to see it, and dumbass apparently thought nobody would be able to see his screen, so yeah, that didn't help him any either.
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's see. The guy is in Santa Clara County Jail on 2 felony counts of attempted child molestation and 2 felony counts of solicitation of a sex crime. Being held without bail. The woman is at Pierce County Jail in Washington. Felony counts of sexual exploitation of a minor, rape of a child, and dealing in depictions of a minor engaged in sexually explicit content or conduct. So this is some serious shit.
Mm. Wow. Of course, we don't know who the preschool teacher's name is. Understandably, they've left it out of the story.
Yeah.
But good for her.
Yep.
Wherever she is. So anyway, now it's time for the proper show proper. All right, so first story we got for the night. As some of you outside of America may not know, well, you probably do considering the little tirade I went on a little earlier, America is going through a weird time right now, and it has a lot to do, of course, with our current, asshole president.
Yeah.
And he's gotten so bad now that, he already was, divisive within the GOP, even though they tried to put on sort of a united front at first. Yeah. But now it's gotten so bad that a lot of them have started, I wouldn't necessarily say jumping ship, but, they're sort of coyly looking to the side trying to make sure that the lifeboats are there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, they're actively putting out legislation to take away, rights of the president as far as like sanctions against Russia.
Yeah, they're also and today I think they basically blocked legally blocked any attempts he could make
putting the Mueller investigation.
Well, not just that, but also in hiring or firing, well, not firing, but like nominating any new people for his administration while Congress is out of session, because they're going to be out of session for the next couple months. And so they've basically put up the legal framework so that he cannot overstep that legally. Of course, that's not necessarily means it's going to stop him. He probably won't be able to get away with it, though, but...
Yeah, he signed that Russian sanctions bill and then immediately started complaining about it.
Yeah. well, he had to. Here's the thing. The vote, it was literally veto-proof, so he had to sign it. Yeah, and it was like...
2 people voted against it. That was it.
Yeah.
And it was funny because he starts complaining about how there's 8 Democrats that are running Congress right now. It's like, okay, technically it's because the GOP has 52 in the Senate and they need 60 for some of this stuff, especially like the ACA repeal stuff. So technically there's that 8 gap, but they're not running anything.
Yeah.
It's literally, I posted a political cartoon last week in the chat of the GOP being depicted as Wile E. Coyotes and Obamacare is the roadrunner.
Yeah,
that is effectively what is going on.
Yeah, but anyway, one of the GOP people who's basically jumped ship is Senator Jeff Flake. This week, he actually put up a column in Politico, basically saying that basically his party is kind of just in denial about him.
Yeah,
and
he likes him at a certain point. Let's see, for conservative, that's an awfully bitter pill to swallow. So as I layered in my defense mechanisms, I even found myself saying things like, if I took the time to respond to every presidential tweet, there would be little time for anything else. Given the volume and velocity of tweets from both the Trump campaign and then the White House, this was certainly true. But it was also a monumental dodge. It would be like Noah saying, if I spent all my time obsessing about the coming flood, there'd be little time for anything else. At a certain point, if one is being honest, the flood becomes the thing that is most worthy of attention. At a certain point, it might be time to build an ark.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's like a... Basically, like he himself says it, Donald Trump is not something that came out ex nihilo. You know, he wasn't born out of a void. He's basically the end result of the way that the GOP has been doing politics over the last 20 years.
And especially over the last 8 with Obama.
Yeah.
Taking the presidential role.
Yeah. Basically, the GOP created Donald Trump.
Yep.
Or at least created the type of sort of archetype that Donald Trump was able to, you know, pick up and put on.
Yeah. Yeah, like early on in this, he says, but we conservatives mocked Barack Obama's failure to deliver on his pledge to change the tone in Washington, even as we worked to assist with that failure. It was we conservatives who, upon Obama's election, say that our number one priority was not advancing a conservative policy agenda, but making Obama a one-term president. The corollary to this binary thinking being that his failure would be our success, and the fortunes of the citizenry would presumably be sorted out in the meantime.
Yeah, that kind of came back to bite you in the ass, didn't it?
Yeah. They were obstructionists for 8 years, and now are mad that they weren't able to actually develop any policies or ability to pass policies once they had the full majority on all 3 parts of the government.
Yeah, and I want people to understand that. This isn't – we aren't saying that, like, rhetorically. When Barack Obama officially was first nominated president, Mitch McConnell went on CNN and said that the GOP's primary directive for the next 4 years is to deny Barack Obama a second term.
Hmm.
And that's literally what they did. They spent 8 years basically doing everything they possibly could to oppose Barack Obama at every single step. Now, obviously, if it's an opposing party, some bit of opposition is expected. But there is a point when you have to realize that you do kind of have to get together and start working on actual legislation.
Yeah.
Can't just be obstructionist for obstruction's sake. You're never going to get anything done.
So this is actually the reason why I actually want to have a few more, not just 2 main political parties in the United States. I want there to be a bunch of them, because then they actually have to, like, form coalitions and get shit done.
Yeah, that's where we start hearing about these weird little factions that we'd never really heard much of during the Obama era.
Yeah. And basically, we're all starting to see that happen before us.
Yeah.
You know, it's – and keep in mind, Donald Trump's only been president for 7 months.
Yeah.
And I think that we have to continually remind ourselves that, because it does feel like it's been a couple years, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's like we still got about another 15 months until we can vote in Congress and senators.
Yeah.
To potentially change the course of what's going on.
Hmm.
Yeah, there's like a great line here that follows just what I read earlier. It was we conservatives who were largely silent when the most egregious and sustained attacks on Obama's legitimacy were leveled by marginal figures who would later be embraced and legitimized by far too many of us.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, that's basically what happened, is they were fine with anybody taking shots at the president in any sort of manner. Whether it was just pure political to personal attacks and racial attacks. And just saying, well, if you're anti-Obama, you're friends with us.
Yep.
And now that person's running the whole thing. And they're completely falling apart because he is constantly complaining that they're not able to run things because he doesn't know what goes on with Congress or any part of this political process. He just wants results, and he's not doing anything to help them.
Yeah. It's true.
Yep.
So, moving on to our next story here. Oh, this one's good. Oh, yeah. So, you know that new communications director that Donald Trump got, Mr. Scaramucci?
The one who hadn't even started yet?
Yeah. Yeah. He's gone.
Yep.
Kicked his ass out after 10 days.
Yeah. He technically hadn't even taken his position yet, and he still got himself fired.
Yeah, Sean Spicer was still technically there to train him.
Yeah.
But apparently he just screwed up. Do you realize how badly you have to screw up
to get fired during your training?
Yeah.
Yeah, you have to screw up pretty badly. But, you know, part of me actually kind of thinks that maybe he was fired because Trump was worried that he would be upstaged.
Yeah, there's that. I mean, there's a lot of Trump in Scaramucci, isn't there?
Yeah. Yep.
For a guy who supposedly hated him a year ago.
Yeah. And not to mention the fact that, you know, I think it was after he started going on that whole tirade against the leakers, threatening to fire everybody in the State Department.
Yeah.
That might have been the last straw.
Yeah. It was the new chief of staff, John Kelly,
mm-hmm.
who sat him down and talked about this being what's happening. And they wanted him to talk to Trump, and apparently Trump wasn't in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
He was off on a trip, going to West Virginia.
Which, by the way, he's going to do again.
Yeah.
Next week. He's going to be gone for another 3-week vacation.
Yep. So he had to get fired over the phone by Trump, which is a fitting end.
Yep.
Yes, it is. But, so it looks like that, they actually do have standards.
Yeah, as low as they are.
Yeah.
At least this new guy does, John Kelly.
Yeah.
But they got from, Department of Homeland Security?
Yeah.
So now there's a hole there.
Yeah. Which he's not going to be able to fill until, you know, Congress is back in session.
October.
Yeah.
So there's a lot going to be, you know, not happening until then.
Yeah.
The head of our Homeland Security is not a thing anymore for a while, which seems to be the Trump administration MO.
Yeah.
Is to take out as many people in office for these various departments.
Yeah. Or, you know, worse, Steve Bannon decides to step in and take the job.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, that's all you need.
Yeah, that is going to be just, that is pure nightmare fuel, isn't it?
Yep.
That is dystopia right there.
Yeah.
Because remember, folks, Steve Bannon's favorite book is arguably one of the most racist screeds on the planet since Mein Kampf. Which, by the way, look for an upcoming episode of Let's Weekend where I actually am going to talk a little bit about that book because it is ugly and horrible in just all the worst ways you can think. It really is. But,
Yeah, Bannon has a picture of himself dressed as Napoleon, a painting of.
Yeah.
Which he got from one Nigel Farage.
Lovely.
But anyway. All right, so, Mr. Scaramucci has been shit canned. Yeah. I would like to say we hardly knew ye, but we kind of got your fill of ye after 10 days, so.
Yeah.
It was only took that long, and we were already sick of you. So,
yeah, good riddance.
Yeah, well. All right, so, next story. Senator Cory Booker, either out of conscience or, you know, trying to rebuild his image.
I think he's been saying he's been trying to pass this sort of thing for a while.
Yeah, he recently introduced the Marijuana Justice Act to Congress. So let's see, what does this act do?
Essentially, it would legalize marijuana use, recreational marijuana use, lifting the federal ban on that, as well as, I believe, doing a strong reform of criminal justice as far as marijuana is concerned.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially cancel out the sentences for anybody with marijuana offenses.
Hmm.
Sort of get them out. And yeah, remove cannabis as a Schedule I drug, so listed along a bunch of other hard drugs is marijuana in this country, which means things like just doing tests to find out what sort of effect marijuana has on various things is impossible to do as a scientist.
Yeah.
So we can't do the testing to figure out if it should stay a Schedule I drug or be lowered.
Hmm.
So they're going to get rid of some of that stuff. See, it'd be retroactive, so it could wipe clean records of people convicted in federal marijuana possession and use cases. Free people serving time for cannabis-related offenses. And we use federal funds to try to encourage states to change their laws in regards to this stuff as well. Because there are some weird areas where people have gotten weed thinking they were legal to do so. But there were strange conundrums in the laws between federal and state and local that prevented them from actually using it. They could get it, but they couldn't actually use it.
Hmm.
And it's that sort of really stupid stuff that this thing is trying to straighten out. And it seems like it's a good idea. It's probably not going to go anywhere right now.
Yeah, that's what I was fixing to say. Good luck on getting this passed, Corey.
Yeah.
Because,
at least a good start.
Yeah, at least people are thinking about it.
All right, so next up, we've got some science news, and the jokes and japes we can get with this one. Okay, so Uranus is one of those, you know, exoplanets out there that's kind of close to like Earth, also kind of not. And of course, let's also be honest, it's been the butt of so many jokes over the years.
It's the one place where astronomers and the general public can come together and have fun.
Yeah. Well, it's about to get funnier, because guess what they discovered today? Apparently, Uranus likes to open and close.
Every day.
Every day.
Oh, dear. This,
Yeah, so the thing here is, this is from Georgia Institute of Technology, a new study they published, that's modeled the magnetosphere around Uranus. Mm-hmm. And that it occasionally opens up to allow solar wind through, which happens every 17 Earth hours. This is where the magnetic field lines. This is comparing to Earth, where the magnetic field lines of our magnetosphere and the solar wind align. This produces aurorae at its poles and likely is doing the same at Uranus. But at Earth, this process is fairly irregular. Uranus seems to be much more frequent. As Uranus is tumbling around, the magnetosphere's orientation is changing in all sorts of directions. The Uranus is already pretty weird because it rotates on its side.
Hmm.
Instead of every other planet in this solar system rotating essentially horizontally.
Yeah, it kind of
around its axis. Hmm. Yeah, so it's essentially rotating on a vertical axis.
Yeah.
Sort of like if our poles just decided to keep going around and around instead of being the focal points. Which is just a really interesting thing about that planet. Its magnetic field is equally weird. It's tipped by about 60 degrees to the planet's rotation, and it's also offset from the center by about one-third of the planet's 15,760-mile radius. On Earth, and indeed other planets, our magnetic field lines come from pretty near our geographic poles. although magnetic north and south changes a bit, not so on Uranus. Yeah, so we're still learning things about it because it's just way out there.
Mm-hmm.
I think, yeah, so most of our data comes from the flyby of Voyager 2 that happened in 1986,
mm-hmm.
When I was born. So that was a long-ass time ago.
Yeah.
Yep.
So they're looking at sending out a new satellite out there in the next decade or two to hopefully learn more about it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so this is a really interesting bit of research they put out about one of the planets that is most unique in this solar system.
Mm-hmm. It's
definitely a phenomenon that I don't think has been exhibited anywhere else. So,
no.
At least not as far as we know.
Yeah, so that's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is neat. By the way, speaking of Uranuses that are going to be clinching... Everybody's most favorite, most punchable pharma douche, Martin Shkreli, was today found guilty of securities fraud and other charges.
Like anybody had any doubts.
And you know what? Have you seen courtroom sketches they've done?
No.
I don't know if you have, but even in a fucking courtroom sketch, I still want to reach in and strangle this prick.
Yeah.
Well, that means it's a really good sketch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
which is amazing because we've seen other sketches over the years of people who are pretty well known as at least their physical appearance, and they completely fuck up the sketch.
Mm-hmm.
So
not like, so not, here. You automatically know who this is supposed to be.
Yeah.
And oh my god, even in a sketch, just the overwhelming desire to just punch this fucker in his smug grin just
yep.
seems to still come through. Like, that is... I don't want to call it talent, but...
Yeah. Yeah, that courtroom sketch artist is quite good.
Yeah, but anyway, so...
He's going to jail.
Yeah, well, we don't... the sentencing hasn't... We don't know when the sentencing is going to be yet, but...
Yeah, he's been convicted on 3 of the 8 mm-hmm. counts of fraud.
And
that he's been charged with, so we'll have to find out what the actual penalties are going to be.
Yeah. Now, if the judge is smart, he's going to go ahead and throw him into jail immediately, because if he doesn't, Crowley is probably smart enough to know that he can probably appeal this, which if he does that means if he does that quickly enough, he'll be able to stay out of jail until... You know, either the appeal is denied or whatever. But, yeah.
And if he goes to jail, well, he'll learn a few things.
Well, that depends on what type of jail he goes to. Remember, this dude's rich, so he probably will end up in Club Fed.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's probably true.
That's not to say that I wouldn't relish the idea of him getting thrown into pound me in the ass prison.
Yeah.
Yeah, it says right here.
You guys have ever been to? Go ahead.
It says right here he is free on $5 million bail.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess with these 3 counts, it's a maximum sentence of 20 years in prison. He's
facing. Yeah. Lock him up. Lock him up. Lock him up.
Lock him up and sell block D.
Yeah. He's going to be getting a lot of D if you know what we're saying.
It's a little something, something.
You ever been to Pound Me in the Ass Prison before? Not a fun place in Pound Me in the Ass Prison. Ward's kind of a dick, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, you don't want to be there. Don't want to be on the wrong side of the warden.
You will be comfortably being able to sit on a baseball bat. And I don't mean horizontally either.
Yeah.
Speaking of prison, this is a story came out of Alabama.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure how this happened.
Well, I'm going to read. Okay, so 12 guys who were in the Walker County Jail. Some point last, the previous Sunday around 6:30 p.m. managed to break out and escape. And somehow, how did they do it? Well, according to this article, they managed to get their hands on some peanut butter, and they used it to cover a door number and trick one of the, I guess, green jailers. Like, he was kind of a greenhorn. He was a new guy.
Yeah.
Now, for the record, all but one of them has been caught again, so...
Yeah.
Not exactly like they were out for very long.
No.
Let's see.
It's not described well. What they did with the peanut butter is they somehow wrote numbers onto this door to make the new jailer think it was a cell door.
Wow, how shitty is the budget for your door that they could, for your jail that they could actually use something as simple as peanut butter to trick you?
Yeah, this was at night, so I imagine they must not have had good lighting at night. Yeah. So that door led to the, not the outside, but to the point where they just have one fence to climb.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it still had the barbed wire on it, but none of them really got hurt badly from it.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, it took them about 10 minutes to get over once they got out. And they ran off to a place about 4 miles away that they were supposed to meet up at. And apparently how this how they found out about this, not everybody that was in on the plane got out. So the people that were behind decided to snitch on them.
Yeah.
So they found... let's see. They found six of them within 90 minutes, found five more over the next 8 hours, and there's one still out, or at least out as the time this was written. And he was in just on drug offenses, so they know he's not a violent person.
Yeah.
So they're not that worried about him, but they're offering a reward for anybody that has information on how to get... get him back in jail.
So, well, I gotta hand it to their ingenuity, at least.
And yeah.
They figured it out. We gotta get the young guy involved.
Yeah, it was a pretty well planned escape, apart from the others snitching on him.
Anyway,
seems like still had cameras that they found the evidence of all this. So they knew who exactly was the ones leaving and all that.
Yep.
So they weren't that good.
Yeah, obviously.
Just good enough to get out.
Got caught, so.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now we've got our big, long, line of entertainment stories, so...
we kind of need them after all of that stuff.
Good God, yes. Anyway. So, first things first. Sony Entertainment has bought Funimation.
This kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
95% stake.
Specifically Sony Pictures Television.
Yeah.
So basically it's they've combined with the acquisition of Funimation, they've also gotten Animax, Kid Station. And so, according to them, this will now allow them to deliver the best anime to fans across screens and platforms. Funimation is basically like next to, I think, like Aniplex. They're like the big, right now, they're like the big anime distributor in the U.S.
Yeah, they might be the biggest because they have, obviously, all the Dragon Ball stuff, One Piece.
Yeah.
Most of the biggest stuff that's out there.
Yeah. They used to have, don't forget, for some of the younger listeners, they did have some serious competition back in the day.
Was what? There was, I think, ADV Films back then.
ADV, Manga
Entertainment.
Yeah, there was a handful.
But now Funimation has Sony money behind them, so...
Yeah.
That could only be a good thing, really.
Yeah. Maybe because now Aniplex feels a bit of a pinch, maybe they'll, you know, stop trying to sell their stuff for god-awful prices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can hope.
Yeah.
Seriously. Please.
Box sets are way too fucking expensive.
Yeah, I guess the 95% stake in this company comes to about $150 million.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not really that much money either.
No, for Sony, no, that's not a lot of money. But
they get all the properties that Funimation has.
Yeah,
Dragon Ball Z, Cowboy Bebop, One Piece, My Hero Academia, Attack on Titan, as well as the streaming service that Funimation runs.
That Crunchyroll?
Funimation Now.
Hmm. Oh, right.
They're partnered with Crunchyroll, though.
All right.
And I guess the CEO, Gen Fukunaga, Fukunaga gets the remaining 5% of stock.
Hmm.
And will stay as CEO.
Right. Well.
So it seems like it probably won't change too much what they're doing.
No.
Yeah.
Which would be the smart move.
Yeah, just let them do what they're doing, just fund them a little bit better, and things should be good.
Yeah, no. So, our next story, MTV, did you know that actually stands for music television?
At least it did at some point.
Yeah. Now it kind of stands for mediocre, but...
Yeah.
Apparently, they have announced that they're going to be bringing back Total Request Live, aka TRL.
Yeah. So they would actually have to play music again.
Yeah, actual music videos. Now, granted, if you watched TRL back in the day, you knew that they didn't necessarily play, you know, the entire music video. They tended to kind of...
chop it up a bit.
Yeah. Like 75% music videos, 20% screaming girls.
Yeah.
And then 5% Carson Daly.
Yeah.
Mugging for the camera.
Yeah. Yeah, which I guess they're going to be building a new studio out in Times Square.
Yeah.
Let's see. 5 co-hosts, including rapper and comedian DC Young Fly, Chicago radio host Eric Zachary. Okay. I don't really know who those are, but run an hour a day at first, potentially building to 2 or 3 hours a day as the show develops.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting. But I guess they have a new president who just came in and kind of said, fuck most of the shit you guys are making.
Yeah.
Seems like a smart move.
Yeah. Well, if he recognizes that MTV's like longevity on their current trajectory is... really short. They might be able to turn it around.
Well, you got to remember they're competing with YouTube now. So
yeah, and Vivo and all those other things that are out there. Don't forget, you know, they're also competing with every pirate service and streaming service out there. Got an uphill battle there.
And I guess this new president was also part of the whole thing where they're at the movie awards. Yeah. Where they were gender-free awards, sort of just everybody was up for best actor and whatnot. So they're going to be doing the same thing with the trophy, the Moonman trophy that they gave out, the VMAs.
Hmm.
It's going to be just called the Moon Person trophy.
By the way, when we're talking about the Moonman, we mean the astronaut.
Yeah.
Not the other dude.
Astronaut.
Not the other dude.
Yeah. It's the astronaut with the MTV flag.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's like the other part of this announcement that's weird.
Yeah. The other guy is a failed McDonald's mascot who occasionally records, you know, racist rap songs on YouTube.
Yeah.
Anyway. So next up, ESPN. I don't watch ESPN. Because I've never been a big fan of sporty ball. But apparently ESPNU, is that ESPN, I guess, Univision?
No, that's their sort of college sports focus channel.
Oh, so it's university.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Their sports. I guess August 8th, for one day, ESPN, it's going to become ESPN 8, The Ocho.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a joke from Dodgeball, A True Underdog Story.
Yeah. Which is actually a pretty funny movie.
Yeah.
if for not the fact that it was kind of ruined at the end. By the way, for those of you who are wondering, if you want to know how it was kind of ruined at the end, Ben Stiller's character kind of does a little rant during the credits where he kind of talks about, you know, how it had to be a nice little story to wrap up instead of, you know, other shit, because apparently Hollywood thinks we're too dumb to accept anything else. Yeah, it's because apparently in the original script they were supposed to lose. And so they just decided to come up with this bullshit money plot to make the end of it have a happy ending.
Yeah.
But The Ocho.
The Ocho is now going to be a thing for one day.
Yeah.
And I guess for that day, the lineup is going to feature unconventional sporting events from midnight to midnight. So they have things like the 2016 American Disc Golf Championship, 2016 Roller Derby Championships, 2016 Sky Zone Ultimate Trampoline Dodgeball.
Of course, they have to have some dodgeball.
Yeah. There. The Firefighters World Challenge 25. The Kadabi World Cup Final. I don't know what an Indian sport. Indian as in India.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The 2017 Championship of Bags. A cornhole tournament. Okay.
Yeah.
The Moxie Games. An uncanny, new, and amazing event which combines a variety of sports into one, such as dodgeball and juggling, martial arts and volleyball, and table tennis and soccer.
Okay.
That's weird.
Yeah, that sounds strange.
Yeah, and they got the U.S. Open Ultimate Championship, a self-officiating competition with two teams on a field similar to a football field, but the object used is a disc. The objective of the game is to catch a pass in the opponent's end zone.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that is really, but they have the schedule listed here.
Yeah.
Also on the list.
Conventional stuff.
Yeah. And they got the World Darts Championship. They also got Evo 2017 World Championship for Street Fighter. That's going to be on at 2:30. Yeah. Only thing that would have made this better if the Sklar brothers were doing commentary over this. Like the cheap seats.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
it's all pre-taped stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that
would have
worked perfectly if they...
So I guess that a lot of those guys just get the day off, basically.
Yeah. They probably, if there's anything important, they put it on the other channels.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I've heard a lot of ESPN people just talk about getting demoted to ESPN The Ocho.
Mm-hmm.
Just if they get pushed off of like the main network to ESPN2 or something like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They just say, oh, we're on The Ocho today.
Joy.
Because it just basically lost their chance of getting good ratings.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, all right, next story. So, everybody who watched Rick and Morty knows that when, you know, the new season came back, or at least, you know, the April Fool's sort of early premiere of the new season came back, one of the things that Rick wanted to do was go back to the dimension where it's always 1998 so he could go to McDonald's and get their now famous Szechuan sauce for, you know, his McNuggets.
Yeah.
So for those who don't know, back in 1998, Walt Disney Studios, of course, released Mulan, which is a great movie, by the way. I recommend it. And to tie in with that, they came up with this Szechuan dipping sauce for the McNuggets, and apparently they're freaking delicious. So much so that Rick basically had to travel the multiverse to get it. Well, Rick and Morty's creator, or at least I guess the co-creator, actually got 3 jugs worth from McDonald's of their actual, honest-to-God, Szechuan sauce.
I think he just got the one.
Oh.
I think they had 3 others they were giving away.
Oh, right.
Well, still, jug of that stuff is not easy to get.
Yeah, they even put special text on it
It says here, McDonald's Szechuan sauce for use only in McDonald's restaurants, University 1998M, during limited promotional window, and then maybe again 20 years later, do not serve to mad scientists traveling with their teenage grandson, potential non-scientist versions of mad scientists from an alternate dimension, and or Jerry.
Yeah. And it came in a nice big orange padded briefcase. It says Dimension C-1998M. And there's a great note with it. It says, Justin, we finally did it. It took months, but we finally brought back some Szechuan sauce. We'll spare you the physics, but turns out Dimension C-1998M is a dimension where it's always 1998. 1998 every day, no smartphones, no social media. It's a weird, scary place, but they've got Szechuan sauce on the regular menu. So here we are with some precious cargo, the Szechuan sauce, remember, and some souvenirs from some of the mentions we tried along the way. We wish we could have brought some more sauce, though, but we couldn't risk keeping a portal like that open. Think about it. If you knew in 1998 that McDonald's would have all-day breakfast in 2017, would you really want to stay in 1998? Of course not.
No.
If we left the portal open, we'd have puka shells, bucket hats, and boy bands as far as the eye could see. It's too risky even for sauce as delicious as this. I feel like fans will also get to experience the glory, but the first bottle in this dimension is for you. Stay swifty. Chef Mike.
Chef Mike, for those you don't know, is the guy who's in charge of McDonald's test kitchens. So
yeah, they just brewed up a couple batches for them.
Yeah.
Nice.
And I actually would not be surprised if they actually do decide to just straight start manufacturing the shit again.
Which would be terrible for the person that bought one of those little sauce packets for $14,000 for Szechuan sauce. It's like, oh, it's back again. Oh, crap.
No, after the promotion that this is going to get, you better believe they're probably going to bring it back.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just make it a regular thing again.
Yeah, just treat it like the McRib.
Yep.
Yeah, just make it an like you said, make it an annual thing.
Except where it's not dependent on the price of pork.
In any particular,
or when it's real cheap, they bring back the McRib.
Yeah, and usually that's why it usually kind of its availability kind of phases in and out across the country.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I gotta make a reminder. I forgot to get a McRib last year.
Yeah.
But anyway, moving on. Los Angeles finalized the deal to host the 2028 Summer Olympics.
Yep.
Not really much here. Just a lot of financial details that got sorted out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the last. Los Angeles did host the
1932.
Yeah.
Third time.
Good long time.
Mm-hmm. So
Randy Newman wrote the big theme song.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think this was more just getting the details sorted out and figuring out what order they were going to go in because we didn't know last time what.
But oh my God, LA is going to become a disaster zone when the Olympics come around.
Yeah, more so than usual.
Yeah, more so than usual.
Yeah, it's a city that has to solve its smog problems before they get there.
Well, apparently it didn't mean any shit to the Russians, so.
Yeah.
Well, they were trying to host the Winter Olympics in a place that didn't really get snow. It was like 50 degrees there during the Winter Olympics.
They were in Russia, and they picked like the one part of the country where they couldn't get snow. Think about that.
And like the hotel where the press were staying was, there were like broken doors, bad toilets, like the fucking worst shit, cheap shit that
the awful tap water.
Yeah,
which was a nice piss yellow.
And it's like, good job, Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Showing that you're a great world leader.
All right, next story. Phil, get ready.
Yeah.
So stories came about that apparently the Facebook AI somehow developed its own language. Now, this reeks of bullshit, so Phil, take it away.
Okay, well, Did it develop its own language? Actually, yes, it did. These kind of AI systems basically are meant to kind of figure out the most efficient way of coming up with a solving a problem. Mm-hmm. In this case, the problem was negotiating the best deal on apples. That was the task that they had set out for them. So the two AI were basically chatting it up. And since the AI researchers hadn't put any constraints on the language, basically they didn't set it so that they had to use English, mm-hmm. They just decided to develop shorthand for whatever, for their discourses. No, the AI researchers did not panic. They did not, see this going on and shut it down. It actually just stayed running for a good while.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't shut down because they were worried that these AIs would take over the world. They were shut down because these AIs were actually too dumb to be useful. because the entire point of the experiment was to come up with two bots that could talk to humans, and, well, they can't.
Nope.
So, although I will point out, if you read some of the text that the AI has, said,
mm-hmm.
It sounds a lot more cogent than most of Trump's tweets lately. So, yeah, there's that. yeah, balls have every to me 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 too. Okay.
Tweet one of 312.
That's what they really should have done. Just started letting this AI tweet all of that stuff. That would have been hilarious.
Yeah.
But that's not what they did. So don't panic. The AI apocalypse is not yet happening.
Nope.
This is a phenomenon that is very well known. Actually, this original story came out in June, but normally the media seem to have picked up on it now. But yeah, the world isn't ending yet.
Uh-huh.
So, good day for that.
At least as far as we know, the singularity isn't here yet. So,
but Ray Kurzweil is working at Google, so that may yet happen. So, anyways.
Well, speaking of perhaps overrated geniuses, Elon Musk is finally going to be able to get a chance to test his Hyperloop.
I think it already did.
Yeah, they just went through the first test.
Bill, explain to people what the Hyperloop is supposed to be.
Okay, so the Hyperloop is going to be a tube.
Mm-hmm.
You could think of it as a pneumatic tube, but it really isn't quite that. It's a tube that's then vacuum is pulled in it, mm-hmm. and then a cart or pod or whatever the conveyance vehicle they decide to go with is magnetically accelerated to a ridiculous speed. Since it's in a vacuum, there's no friction, so I can move really, really fast. So, yeah, that's basically what the Hyperloop is. And they tried it out, and it works.
Yeah.
Yeah, it totally works. They got a pretty decent acceleration out of there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not quite brain scrambling, but it wouldn't be pleasant for somebody to be in that thing.
Yeah, see, that's the problem with the whole Hyperloop thing is, see, the idea is the Hyperloop is meant to be a means of transportation.
Yeah, but this is a solvable problem.
Yeah, and it is solvable.
Yeah.
And even if you couldn't, you could probably still use it to ship cargo.
Yeah, you could ship cargo, stuff that's not really going to be, perishable or breakable. But really, the idea is if you're going to get people into it, you have to use a more gradual acceleration to get it up to speed. That way, mm-hmm. the forces involved are going to be a lot less. But then you have the problem that you're going to have to start slowing it down very pretty far away from where your destination is.
Because if you basically try to like start stopping this thing, like even within a mile or like even 10 miles of where its destination is, you're basically going to end up with human goo on the inside.
So, yeah, you don't want to do that. But, yeah, it's cool.
Yeah, this the way they did this test, it was a 1,600-foot-long concrete tube.
Mm-hmm.
Hit about 192 miles an hour in about 5 seconds.
Yeah, see, that would be a little bit of a problem for a human. It wouldn't be pleasant.
Yeah, that's about the speed of a high-speed train.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not one of Japan's bullet trains. Those are over 300 miles per hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The pod is about 28 feet long, made of aluminum carbon fiber. Let's see. The electric propulsion system produces about over 3,000 horsepower.
Yeah.
And the tube is 11 feet in diameter.
Yeah.
16 wheels. Yeah, it's not a big system, not a big pod to be in. I imagine this was all just obviously testing pods, mm-hmm. so it's not made to be comfortable or anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, they didn't even put anybody in it. They just kind of fired it off.
We just have a camera view of it going through.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm guessing when they do sort of get around to deciding to make, you know, start putting seats and various, you know, accoutrements and stuff inside of it, first of all, they're going to have to find a way to do it so that, you know, this thing starts up and doesn't, you know, immediately rupture everyone's organs.
Yeah. Well, one of the things you would need to do is basically have your seats backward facing.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you can take
which, man, that is going to be a weird – that would be a weird-ass sensation.
Yeah, it's backwards. Like if you – like you're getting in a ride from, like, Uber or something.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And your back seats are facing the either opposite way from the driver.
That would be weird. But
it's like, weird. I'm like, whoa. But, but yeah, I guess, I'm guessing it is, if they do this right, it is very much, it would very much be possible to comfortably, you know, help, you know, ship human passengers from one part to the other without much discomfort.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not.
Theoretically, it's just they got to get around to not only doing it, but making it cost effective.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. But this was the first test, and hey, it worked.
Yeah. No.
Nobody died.
That's a good start.
Nobody was in it.
Yeah. If it just says here, for Hyperloop to truly take off, it must operate cheaply enough to lure customers away from air travel or high-speed rail.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the problem of loading people, or more likely cargo, without ruining the near-vacuum state of tube.
Mm. Yeah.
It's like, okay, you've got this near-vacuum seal in this tube. How do you open it up to people?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems like a potential way of just – you load them in, and then you create the seal.
That's
sort of like have it.
Probably another way to go about it. And another thing you could do is airlocks. There are many ways to solve this kind of thing. It's just, you know, infrastructure needs to.
And obviously, there's a lot of infrastructure to it, because how do you put this into the real world?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, I mean,
we've got lots of, like on the East Coast, lots of subways and train stations around, as well as obviously roads and all that. It's like, where do you put this tube at?
Yeah,
exactly.
You could go deeper, but then you start getting this weird thing of like, New York has like tons of subways all under it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where is this Hyperloop tube supposed to go and not fuck up everything else?
Yeah,
exactly.
So they've already got a ton of problems right now in New York City where they're working on different stations and such.
Yeah.
And it's causing a lot of traffic problems because people are obviously having to find alternate routes and they're getting late.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, anyway.
Still cool.
Speaking of money, recently it was discovered that although Netflix has been doing really, really well, and I mean, why not?
Yeah, they have 104 million subscribers now.
Yeah. I mean, they're almost single-handedly killing network television.
Yes.
Just strangling it with their bare hands. But apparently they are $20 billion in the red.
Hmm.
Yeah, the figures they have here, there's $4.8 billion in long-term debt.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And $15.7 billion in other obligations.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, for the record, for
is probably programming related.
Yeah. For the record, when it comes to businesses, a debt isn't necessarily a bad thing.
No.
But
it's just something you can borrow against.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
you just have to keep growing so you can keep paying it off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're still trajecting pretty solid growth, so.
Yeah.
You know, it shouldn't be too much trouble, I don't think.
No.
Unless something comes along that can just straight up render Netflix obsolete. And honestly, I don't think we're there yet.
No, they have such a huge lead over the other competitors right now. It's not even funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean,
it helps
the thing
that
is,
they're just throwing tons of money at people.
Yeah. Like Carol Burnett.
Yeah.
Throwing out big names, just saying, hey, come work with us. We'll give you a blank check, essentially.
Yeah.
Yep.
And it's working.
Yeah.
It's working. They've been a hell of a success. Mm-hmm. And
you just have to hope that wave doesn't crash on them.
Yeah.
Oh.
Which is why they've been canceling some series, especially ones that are more expensive, that aren't getting the return that they're hoping.
Yeah.
Which is why stuff like Sense8 went down.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, talking about Carol Burnett. She's got a Netflix series.
Mm-hmm. She does.
Yep. It's going to be 2018, I think.
Yep.
Yep. Oh.
It's a pretty good trailer of her talking to this kid that's supposedly an exec at Netflix. Mm-hmm. And, it's pretty good, especially at the end when he's like, okay, you need to get an Instagram. It's like, what's Instagram? And at the end, when he agrees to hire her on, does like a fist bump, says, stay woke. She's like, I will. Okay.
Yeah.
Which obviously, for people who don't know, Carol Burnett is a comedy legend.
Yeah.
She used to have one of the best shows on television years ago.
One of the first big name female comedians after like Lucille Ball and a couple others. Yeah.
Well, weirdly enough, that show still holds up all these years later.
Carol Burnett,
like it's still laugh out loud funny.
Yeah.
And I guess this show is focusing on she has herself, celebrity guests, and everyday people receiving advice to their real life problems from the straight shooters around little kids.
Oh dear. This is going to be amazing.
As long as it's not kids start to say the darndest things, if it's more just these kids are like actual little people talking to them, like trying to solve their problems, that might be interesting, especially if Carol Burnett is the one sort of helping decide what's going on.
We'll wait.
I guess she does actually have an Instagram.
Yep. She's got an Instagram.
At It's Carol Burnett.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if Betty White can make the jump into social media, I think Carol Burnett can too.
The worst part of Betty White on there is when she trends and everybody's like, oh god, is this the one?
Yeah. Don't want that. But,
anyway. Yeah.
Well, it's always those assholes that finds a way to get it trending.
Yep.
Well, next up we got David Fincher. David Fincher has a new show coming out. It's going to be called Mindhunters. Well, Mindhunter, actually. It's going to be out in, I believe, October?
Yep.
October
13th.
Friday the 13th.
Of course.
Yep.
Which is also when Friday the 13th, the game, releases on...
Everything.
Physical.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think with the campaign and all that. It's like, okay, there's your... Every horror movie, get out by then.
Yeah.
If you're not, you fucked up.
Yep.
Yeah. But basically, the premise of the show is these two FBI investigators who, in order to help solve other cases, they regularly interview infamous serial killers in prison, and it's totally kind of like Silence of the Lambs, isn't
it? Yeah, it's totally like Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah, and this takes place in the 70s, I think.
Yeah, I remember I'm saying this, and I'm like, This is fucking Silence of the Lambs.
It's totally. You just need his Hannibal Lecter, and yeah, this is going to be that.
But, just this in and Jodie Foster, and boom, there you go.
Yeah. But it is David Fincher, so it could be pretty good.
Oh, I'm not doubting his talent. It's just...
It's like...
it's been done, dude.
I've heard this before.
Yeah. Speaking of something that actually has kind of not been done before, though. So, Aaron McGruder, famous creator of The Boondocks, Black Jesus, some good stuff. He is working with Amazon to create a alternate history show for their, you know, streaming service. That's going to basically be a alternate history of what would happen after the Civil War. The slaves were given reparations, and they basically end up forming sort of their own country within what they used to call the Black Belt. And in this case, it's made up of the states of, let's say, Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama.
Yep.
And I guess the overall sort of plot is them sort of having to deal with their much larger neighbor.
Yeah, the rest of the
country. You know, dealing with being an independent country, and yeah.
This has the potential to be pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially having Aaron McGruder on it, you know, it's going to have a certain style to it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And
I like it sort of has a similar premise to the Confederate show that HBO's working on.
Yeah, but it's like from the opposite perspective.
Yeah, it's like, hey, what if we pivot the opposite way?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Instead of it going in favor of the white people, let's go in favor of the black people.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they end up getting their own... They end up getting self-determination in basically their own country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, for those who don't know, in the early 20th century, that was something that... some leaders in the black community were trying to get done.
Yeah.
Eventually, yeah, everybody knows, you know, there are various countries made up of who were founded by freed slaves. Haiti, Sierra Leone, Liberia. Mm. So, you know, it's got some basis in reality. It's happened before.
Yeah. It's just, you know, never happened within the U.S., so that's gonna be an interesting take on it.
Oh, it's gonna be this and Confederates, I cannot wait to see them because not just because of just I love the premises and think they are good premises and they'll have a lot to say to the world, but I just wanna see the shit show that's gonna come and, you know, all these very real issues are put in a very raw, you know, uncensored format.
Yeah, because one of them's HBO,
where you
one of them's
have
Amazon.
To fucking deal with them.
Yeah, they don't have to deal with broadcast TV rules.
Yeah, like I think Amazon is running a Man in the High Castle, aren't they?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah,
yeah. So they've done shit like this before.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I like that they acknowledge that they announced this pretty much because of the Confederate news.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It felt this was the appropriate time to make sure that that audiences and the creative community knew there was a project that pre-existed and we are pretty far down the road with it.
So
just make sure, hey, we've had this thing going on for a while. So if you are depressed by Confederates, know that there's something going against it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Confederates was also in the works for a long time, too, apparently.
Yeah.
Lots to look forward to.
Well, I think, because Confederates is, I do not doubt that the first episode of Confederates is not only going to be a ratings, like, juggernaut, but it's also going to be extremely controversial because remember, this is from the showrunners of Game of Thrones, and everybody remembers what was in the first episode of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, we won't spoil it for those of you who have not watched the show yet. What's wrong with you if you haven't?
So. Yeah, seriously. But Anyway, so speaking of before we get to that, YouTube Red.
Yeah.
Do you guys actually use YouTube Red?
Nope.
Me neither. But apparently they've announced a comedy, a sort of spin-off of the original 1984 Karate Kid.
Yeah.
A comedy called Cobra Kai.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, featuring, let's see, Daniel LaRusso and Ralph Macchio.
So, well, they got one of the originals in there. Well, two of them, actually.
Yeah. And, both the two main kids in that.
Yep. Yeah. But so much nope. Just nope. Just the idea.
I mean, the first Karate Kid, honestly,
on a Karate Kid is just stupid.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. The first Karate Kid, it was only marginally good.
Yeah, and the ones that followed were worse. So
were utter shit.
Yeah,
yeah. I finally watched the original movie in whole. Hmm. A few months ago, and was kind of stunned by how much it's just this kid just getting bullied for like the first hour or so.
Yeah.
And then he finally gets does the weird chores forever.
Yeah.
And eventually, like somehow knows martial arts.
Yeah.
They don't explain.
Basically, that. Pat Morita is the reason that movie is good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like bar none.
Yeah.
If it didn't have Pat Morita, it would be utter shit.
Yeah. We can't have Pat Morita anymore, so...
No.
Mm.
Yeah, there's that sad bit of trivia where Ralph Macchio is older than Pat Morita was in that movie at the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which just makes you feel real old.
Yeah. Oh, God. So. But, anyway, so...
Yeah, so it's a 10-episode, half-hour comedy series.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody will watch it because nobody has YouTube Red.
Yeah. Right. Well, anyway,
yeah, somebody has it because I get a little bit of money from them, from people with that part of my personal channel. It's weird.
Yeah. Well, there's people that
like
have,
what, like a dime.
Well, there's people that subscribe to Google Play Music, and if you do that, you get YouTube Red with it. So
yeah, I think that's a recent thing they did.
Yeah. So there's that.
But anyway, so speaking of HBO, by the way, earlier. Somebody hacked into HBO, and they managed to get just thousands upon thousands of internal documents, including synopses and scripts for upcoming Game of Thrones episodes.
Yeah, and they've kind of, like, dribbled out a few of the scripts just to prove that they had them. But based on the amount of data that was exfiltrated, they probably have episodes as well.
Yep.
So, yeah, Sony got massively hacked a couple of years back. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
HBO, how's that feel? That's not good. Your security apparently isn't that great. Because either it was an inside job or your IT sucks.
Yeah. Apparently, whoever it is that got it, they aren't asking for any kind of ransom or anything. They basically just said, put out a message that said HBO is falling, and then started putting out what they had. So,
okay. I don't get what the point of that is, but whatever.
That's just dumb hacker shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, proclaim we are better than you. It's like, nobody's going to fucking do that.
Well, given that, you know, HBO is a Time Warner company, and Time Warner and AT&T are apparently going to merge, and AT&T's like a couple $100 million in debt right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is kind of possible that if that merger does go through, then HBO's spending would go way down, and then it would be pretty much falling. So, I guess there's that.
Yeah.
If you really want to read into it.
See, that also kind of makes me think that maybe this was an internal hack.
Yeah.
So
most of the stuff at this scale usually is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it seems like they got about 1.5 terabytes of data.
Mm-hmm.
No real idea what any of that means, because that's just could just be filler shit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's probably a whole bunch of documents, emails, and yeah. stuff. But there's probably
they've posted there too. Images of internal admin tools, employee names, email addresses. So showing all that stuff, show they have had access to that stuff. Yeah. As well as personal info for one of the senior HBO executives.
Yeah.
Text document with a bunch of their online accounts, newspaper subscriptions, online banking info, personal health stuff. Yeah. So, yeah. Yep. So they seem to get in somebody's work email at the very least, and maybe got into the admin stuff through that.
Probably. But, yeah, that's pretty bad. Oh, well.
All right, well.
Our last story of the evening.
Yeah, our last story. We're finally finding out about the next spinoff Transformers movie, which already gets a plus in my book for the simple fact that Michael Bay is nowhere near it.
Thank God. Because that last movie? I don't even know. Man, I just don't even know.
Did you have to go see it?
No, I didn't go see it. Let's just say I was given a copy, and I kind of wish I hadn't have been, because it was a complete waste of my time.
Oh, yeah. Funny enough, Nostalgia Critic, you know, Doug Walker, he did one of his Nostalgia Critics on the recent Transformers movie before it actually came out.
Yeah.
And he basically did like a big general thing about it. And from what I've been told, based completely on just on literally his whole thing was based on past experience with the last few movies and just the formula they have.
Yeah.
He pretty much nailed it.
Yeah. That's, you know, those things that they did before. Yeah. That's what they did again. Only worse.
Yeah.
But this one will have, will feature Bumblebee. Will star Bumblebee, and it'll feature John Cena for some reason, because he wants to act again.
Yeah.
Yeah,
she didn't.
Yeah, he's been pretty good in some of his stuff. Trainwreck was really good.
Yeah.
LeBron James in there.
I didn't really, you know, razz him too much, because as dumb of a movie as The Marine was, I actually liked it, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the whole WWE thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're forcing as many of their people into this whole production studio thing they have going on, which their whole mantra is, remember X movie? We're making our thing with that, with wrestlers.
Yeah.
Hey, you like Battle Royale? Here's Steven Austin.
Yeah.
That.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's all that stuff, but yeah, so he's like the big name actor. They got a bunch of younger people that are in this. I don't recognize any of their names.
Yeah.
But the director actually has a great reputation. It's Travis Knight.
Hmm.
Did Kubo and the Two Strings. Yeah.
So, I mean, there's...
Mm-hmm.
Well, the fact that it has nothing to do with Michael Bay is already a big point in its favor, so...
Yeah. By that virtue alone, it's already shaping up to get a better critical reception than the last five Transformer movies combined.
Yeah, you can't do any worse. I mean...
I guess Michael Bay is still tied to this. He's a, it's a producer.
Oh.
Yeah.
Executive producer, I guess, but I would imagine having Travis Knight in there, he's not going to...
Do well, a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's not going to let them sort of take over it as much as they probably would like to, at least.
I do believe we... Yep, well, I do believe we've now got a show, folks.
Yeah, and I've got a mess to edit.
Yeah, you have fun with that. But anyway, I would like to remind our viewers, you can, in fact, contact us. In fact, we want you to now, because we've been doing some calculations, and our listening audience has actually been expanding quite steadily over the last few weeks. So we would like you to know exactly why, what exactly it is you like. Some critiques are also welcome, 'cause you know, ultimately we want to make this a better listening experience for you, the audience. One of those is indeed getting me a better microphone at some point.
Yep.
I am holding Phil to that. So, Phil?
Yeah, we'll work on that.
Better. I just kind of put you out front here.
Yeah, you just threw me under the bus. That's fine.
Yeah.
That's okay.
But anyway, if you have a question, comment, critique, have something you want us to read on the air, or just want to say something to us, drop us a line at letsweekenders@gmail.com. We will have a link at the very bottom of the show notes, so click on that, send us a mail, and we'll do our best to get back at you, and we'll even read it on air. So, you know, just no pressure there.
Yep.
Also, on top of iTunes, you can also hear our little podcast on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, your toaster oven, your shower head, probably your printer. You know what? As far as I'm concerned, you could probably start up one of those old-timey radios with the tubes in them, and you could probably play us there, too.
Yeah, you just never know.
Yeah, well, with that, I have been your host in the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Felipe Manalfo, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Elogi, I would like to say good night. Summer's almost over, folks.